Hello, 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 everybody. And you can tell my voice is back, and I hope I won't be coughing today. So welcome to the great show, Common Sense Uncensored, and I am so excited today. I've got a wonderful guest in, and Dustin, I'm going to have you pronounce your last name for me.
Gavrilo, like low government.
Okay. And you are the, I got hooked up with you through a bunch of people, and you have a wonderful little operation that's out on Substack. Would you do me a favor and because this is my first time meeting you face to face, would you give us a little background as to who you are and what you do, please?
Yeah, so my name is Dustin Gavrilo. I am the managing director of the North Dakota Watchdog Network, which is a 501c3 nonprofit that started in 2012. We dig into basically, government transparency, oversight issues, ethics. We're for lower taxes, less government, you know, the traditional fiscal conservative issues. Prior to that, we operated as the North Dakota Taxpayers Association for 4 years, and that was a state PAC. And then prior to that, up until 2008, from about 2006 to 2008, we originally started as the first attempt at the Americans for Prosperity North Dakota chapter when Dwayne Sand was the state director and Ed Schaefer was the head of the advisory board at that time. And Ed Schaefer's one of my primary advisors still to this day.
Awesome. You guys, the one thing I noticed when I went out and I subscribed, I'll admit it, I subscribed to your Substack page, and it is enlightening, and that is not doing it justice, because you happen to be one of the best researchers that, please don't let your head explode, but one of the best researchers I've found, because you actually understand journalism, unlike so many other people that call themselves journalists today. And you don't deal in innuendo, you don't jumpstart things, you peel back the onion to find out what's going on at the core. And you mentioned ethics, which has been extremely interesting lately. We just had a senator, Jason Doctor, who was pretty much handed his fanny by a judge for something he still to this day hasn't said he did anything wrong with. And now, of course, the Democrats are calling for resignation and yada yada. But people I talk to when I mention things like this tell me that this isn't going on in North Dakota, that North Dakota doesn't have an issue because we're a Republican red state and everything is just fine. And what do you have to say to that when someone, and I mean, they're, I have a right to their opinion, but what do you have to say to someone when they think that is the way that our government currently is in the state of North Dakota?
They're naive and they have tunnel vision. And I've been hearing that for as long as I've been involved, since 2006, that everything is fine in North Dakota, Republic, you don't have to worry. And in fact, a one-party state where there's no significant or meaningful opposition party is where the worst ethical violations occur, in my view. It's actually a detriment to the Republican Party that there is not a viable and healthy Democratic Party here. If there was any sort of danger of Republicans losing in most districts, now up in Grand Forks, you've got a few swing districts with the university there that do tend to vote Democrat here and there, but North Dakota as a whole is basically a dead zone for Democrats at the statewide level. Unless your name is Heitkamp, you pretty much have no chance to win anything. And so, in my experience, it is the fact that without an opposition party to hold the Republicans accountable, they get wild and crazy on their own, and they get out of control, and that's how we end up where we are with legislators, many legislators having ethical problems. We get into corporate cronyism
Yes.
with millions and hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on pet projects. You have guys like Kevin O'Leary being hired by the State Commerce Department to divvy out $45 million because there's nobody in the state government that has the expertise to determine who is a good investment. And never mind the fact that the state shouldn't be investing in that way anyway, because the state should not be a venture capital fund. And so, we get down this road of no opposition, nobody holding them accountable, and too much money available to spend, and it's just a recipe for disaster.
Well, I've talked to some of the Democrats and stuff, and basically it's gotten to the point where whoever gets the short straw gets to run. And when I'm talking with my husband, I've often made the comment that it's not just the fact that they don't think they can win. I think you'll have to let me know what you think about this, but I think part of the reason the Democrat Party isn't even that active in North Dakota is in many ways they don't need to be. A lot of what I see getting passed as far as legislation and stuff, I don't think a lot of the Democrats would disagree with.
No, I'm reminded of all the way back in 2007 or 9 when John Hoeven issued a statewide budget that called for, I think it was either 25 or 32% increase. And Tracy Potter, who is a hardcore, true believer liberal from Bismarck, said that the John Hoeven budget is a pretty good Democratic budget. He didn't really have much to say. The disagreements probably are a matter of if Republicans want to increase spending 32%, Democrats would go 40% and switch it from being targeting corporate welfare to actual welfare. But at the end of the day, the dollars are spent. It's just a matter of where they get put.
Well, that's why I've often told people that in many ways what we have is we have a uniparty in North Dakota. And the when I take a look, because after every session there's a voting sheet that's put out by the conservatives and stuff, and it shows the legislators and how they voted, whether they're Republican or Democrat, and the number of Republican, and I use the air quotes around that, legislators that are voting lockstep with the Democrats is almost as astronomical.
Well, what's interesting, and if you're referring to Mike Blessum's scorecard last session, my biggest critique of that was I think it's faulty assumption to assume that the Republicans are voting with Democrats. I think the Democrats are voting with Republicans.
Okay. That's an I
And
hadn't
it's
thought of it
actually
that
the
way.
Republicans that are driving the spending because they're the ones in charge. And the Democrats vote with Republicans knowing that that's safe. If they go and say that they vote with the Republicans, then that gives them an argument to say, keep voting for us in Grand Forks. I think of a guy like Cory Mock, who, when he first got in, and I've known Cory for a long time. I've been out personally with him. And he started out, he was fairly liberal, but now, amongst Democrats, he's fairly conservative. If he ran as a Republican, which I know he has been recruited in the past to do, he wouldn't be the most liberal Republican. He would be, probably 15 to 20% from the center in the Republican Party, at least on fiscal issues. And when it comes to what I study and can worry about, that's really my main purpose is the fiscal and government oversight issues. And so, I think that there's just on the money stuff, they would spend it in different places. But I don't think that they would actually spend all that much more than Republicans do.
Well, and I think it's the reason we have an ethics problem because, quite frankly, these people don't even believe that they can be touched. I'm sure Jason Doctor was livid that he even got a sentence. And I think he was probably shocked. And I have to think how many more, because you got anybody who knows anything about politics realizes that if this guy got caught, he was the one that was thrown to the wolves to cover the people that are above him, in my opinion, anyway. And thus, they can say, oh, well, our ethic problem has now been taken care of, and skip on down the road.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've uncovered and made a point of highlighting a $100,000 grant that went to State Senator Greg Kessel out of just north of Belfield for a beer brewing supply company.
Yep.
You know, North Dakota is number one state for beer consumption per capita and number four for alcohol entirely. There's no reason for us to be subsidizing the alcohol industry. It's doing just fine in North Dakota. One person called me and said, well, this is a value-added thing. We can sell our wheat for a higher price. And you know, that's a bogus argument.
Yeah.
Just because you're going to get more money for a certain segment of a crop doesn't mean that the state needs to subsidize that business and that industry. More recently, I started digging into the issue that you have up there in Grand Forks with State Representative Emily O'Brien, who is the Chief Operating Officer for the Biosciences Association of North Dakota, that got a $600,000 grant from the state. And then on her board of directors is other legislators and lobbyists who hired her. And we've got all these layers where we have legislators that don't have their own business acumen on their own. They don't have their own businesses unless they are propped up by the state government, and they get into office either to help their existing business or to give them a way to get into an industry or a business that they wouldn't otherwise be qualified to get into, because now they have a vote and can vote and support funding for a certain organization or business that then they can get a job through. And this may not be illegal by the letter of the law, but it is certainly questionable ethically and morally. And it just brings out the fact that, you know, we need to be promoting less government, less spending, because the more spending and the more government that you have, the more problems you have, the more enticement you have, the more moral hazard of problems that you have. And so we've created a culture in North Dakota where Republicans don't have to worry about getting reelected. And so they don't worry about what they do, because even if they get caught, it doesn't matter. You look at someone like Ryan Rauschenberger, who consistently would get in trouble with the law for drinking on the clock even. And it took how many years of that happening before anybody cracked down on him and said, it's time for you to make a change here, get your life in order. We've got lots of legislators that have the same exact problem.
Kristen Baszler.
In their personal lives, in their business lives, they've created a situation where their financial well-being is tied to their ability to pass bills that benefit somebody that might benefit them.
Yep. And I see this type of crony capitalism, and I see it continuing and continuing on, and it's actually ballooning. Because there seems to be no need to stop it. And when it was funny, because the explanation that was given, of course, was that the ethical rules are just so difficult to understand. Seriously? I mean, seriously? You don't know ethics? You need to have a rule book, and then you need to have it explained to you. So now they're going to have a class on ethics. I just thought, oh, aren't you cute? Because that, God knows, that'll solve it all, right?
Well, even worse than that, They are State Representative Mike LaFleur, who is that House Majority Leader, appointed and assigned Emily O'Brien to look at the issues of ethics. And she is the chairperson of the Interim Legislative Audit Committee. And so he sent her a letter saying that their committee is supposed to look at these things and look at the conflicts and synchronizing the rules and getting things to the point where they can follow it. They are the ones that make these rules. Remember the voters in 2018, against the wishes of the Republican Party, voted in favor of the Ethics Commission, which was put up on the ballot by a group of Democrats, and I voted against it. I lobbied against it when it was on the ballot. I thought that it was going in the wrong direction, but the voters said yes to it. And then immediately after that passed in 2018, in the 2019 session, you had legislators going in and manipulating the statutory enabling language because the Ethics Commission was a constitutional measure, and they had to implement the statutory law to make it work. And they implemented that statutory law in such a way that the Ethics Commission would have the least amount of effectiveness possible. But even with all of that set up, and they established those rules, even with all of it set up in their favor to make it so that there was very little chance of them getting caught for anything, and if they did get caught, there was very little punishment or circumstance, Jason Doctor still has managed to get himself in trouble. And that Jason Doctor case started as an ethics complaint filed by Joel Heitkamp and Tyler Axness to the Ethics Commission, which then ended up in the judicial system and ended up with a guilty conviction by a jury of 12. So it just goes to show that even when they try to rig the system, and we talk, conservatives talk a lot about how Democrats rig the system. Republicans rig the
They
system as
sure
much,
do.
if not more, than Democrats, but the Democrats are better at using those systems against Republicans once they figure out what's actually going on.
Well, I know that I when I took a look at it and I said, well, all this is going to mean is that they're going to change the rules.
Yes.
The ethic rules are just going to change. I have to do my very first profit margin break right now for the broken drum.
The Broken Drum Bar brings you Bike Night. Hop on your bike and ride to the Broken Drum Monday nights all summer long. From 6 to 9, enjoy Bike Night specials on domestic bottles, cans, and rails. 375 Fireball and McGillicuddy's. $4 Busch Light Pounders. There's deals on domestic and import taps. And $2 off any burger basket of your choice. Bike Night at the Broken Drum, and you don't need two wheels to hang out for a great time. The Broken Drum, Monday nights, place to be from 6 to 9. It's Bike Night for 21 and older. Kick off the week the right way. Monday Night Bike Night at the Broken Drum across from Home of Economy in Grand Forks.
I remember my scooter days. Those were the days. Okay, we're talking about ethically challenged and things that just don't sound right. So I'd like to make a little quick segue into this CO2 pipeline because I'm seeing a lot of crony capitalism and ethics issues popping up with this CO2 pipeline. And you ran a very interesting article called "Who's Really Responsible for Carbon Capture in North Dakota?" Can you enlighten us a little bit on that?
Oh, sorry.
That's
I
okay.
gotta unmute myself. I thought I did. If you look back, I did an analysis and went through every legislative session going back to 1997, in fact, and came up with the conclusion that North Dakota legislators and North Dakota industry has been pushing for carbon capture for the better part of the last 30 years. In fact, this started under Ed Schaefer's administration with some tax incentives, which helped create the smaller CO2 pipeline that goes from DGC, the Dakota Gasification Plant, north of Beulah, up to Canada. And that was the type of project that they had envisioned with these policies. But along the way, as we got closer to present day, there was more and more legislation in place, and the industry and Republicans decided that they would harness the idea of carbon capture for themselves as a way to fight the progressive liberal left-wing environmentalists that want to use the federal government, the EPA, and regulations to put oil and gas out of business, basically, and coal. And so what the industry, along with elected Republicans, came up with was a strategy to push the federal government to increase the federal incentives for these things. And the first step in that was enhancing and extending the 45Q tax credit, which already existed prior to the first Trump administration. And under Trump, one of the last things that he did as president was sign the John Barroso of Wyoming bill that it increased the amount of that 45Q tax credit. Then Biden, once it was established that Republicans were in favor of that, expanded and enhanced it more in the Inflation Reduction Act, which has only increased inflation. But this has become a bipartisan thing where the Republican Party, with the inspiration and pushing of the oil, gas, and coal industry, has hijacked the green agenda and the Green New Deal for their own purposes. So instead of it being about putting coal, oil, and gas out of business directly through regulation, Republicans and the industry figured out how to create a scenario where the federal tax code would be used to create tax credits that will basically bribe the oil, gas, and coal industry to go out of business and pay them to do it. So the reason that Harold Hamm invested $250 million into the Summit Carbon Solutions CO2 pipeline, bringing CO2 from Iowa, which is primarily the ethanol plants in Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, up into North Dakota and putting it in the ground, is because they know that they will generate in about 12 years roughly $20 billion in those 45Q tax credits, and those are refundable credits that they can go and basically cash in or apply towards whatever tax liability that they have through their companies. And so a guy like Harold Hamm kicked in $250 million to own 30% of the new Summit Carbon Solutions in order to make roughly $6 to $8 billion over the next 12 years. So that in 12 years, when federal policy has come into place that will push oil production out of America, that's their goal ultimately, he can walk away. He could sell all of his oil properties for 80 cents on the dollar, take the $6 to $8 billion from this 45Q tax credit, and he'll retire from the oil business with more money than he ever had, even before the divorce. And so
And to hell with the
basically,
people. And to hell with the people out here who rely on that stuff for survival.
right, because this is all about their profits. And you've used the word crony capitalism a few times, and I think that phrase is actually obsolete. It's crony corporatism, because it's not capitalism anymore. It is corporatism, and it is really, more specifically, Republican socialism. And so Republicans in North Dakota have adopted the belief that Republican socialism is good and Democrat socialism is bad. And this started about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, with the creation of the Western Area Water Supply in Western North Dakota, which is a state-owned water company that was set up to sell frack water to the oil companies and subsidize fracking in the Bakken. And it has become a major problem out west. It competes with private water producers. In fact, in 2015, when the financial model of the Western Area Water Supply was failing because oil prices were diving and there was no demand, the legislature actually proposed levying a 5% water extraction tax on the private producers to bail out the state-owned frack water company. And so what they're doing with Summit Carbon Solutions is essentially a replication of that model, and that ultimately the state of North Dakota will be asked to spend billions of dollars to build out a new pipeline to take CO2 out to the oil fields to do enhanced oil recovery. But that's in 10, 12, 15 years, if the oil industry is not already put out of business by the federal government, either by regulations or by the attrition of the companies going out of business themselves.
I find it so interesting that all of this stuff is sold to us as for our own good, for our mm-hmm. own safety, for the benefit of the people on the planet. And it's nothing but hyperbole and marketing, because it's exactly the opposite.
Correct, correct. It's all political rhetoric. And we've all been conditioned to believe that the biggest threat is the left-wing communists, socialists, whatever you want to call them. But when it comes down to it, ultimately, the powers that control things are actually the powers that are making money off of it. The Congress is never going to be in such a bad shape that they literally shut down oil, coal, and natural gas. The Biden administration and future Democratic administrations might try to do it with executive orders, but that will only last as long as that administration is in office. And as we've seen over the last 20 years, we're just back and forth on all these regulations. And so the Republican solution, instead of fighting the bad policies of the left and of the Democrats on their face, they've given up that fight. They've instead switched to the if you can't beat them, join them approach of saying, okay, we're for the green agenda under our terms as long as we can make money off of it.
I've actually heard that stated when people are defending the carbon capture. I've actually heard some of the pundits, who shall go unnamed, but I've actually heard them say, if you can't beat them, join them and figure out how to do it our way. We're still getting screwed out here.
Yep.
I mean, who does it matter who's piloting the Titanic? She's going down.
Yeah. And it is important to understand the history of these things. And it kind of goes the same way. You know, 2011, right after the Obamacare fight, I jumped into the cap and trade fight. And I was working very closely with the oil industry, with Ron Ness and the Petroleum Council against that. But between 2011 and now, and really 2011 and 2019, during the Trump administration, the industry just flipped. They decided we're going to make money off the green agenda instead of fighting it outright. They gave up on fighting it outright. It's kind of like the equivalent is the tobacco settlements. You know, if you remember back in the 90s with the tobacco companies were fighting the federal government, and eventually they settled, and ultimately they started just doing whatever the feds wanted them to as part of the settlement. And we're still, you know, North Dakota is still getting millions of dollars from that settlement, that happened 25 years ago. And so that's the corollary, I believe, historically, is that the industry will fight on principle only so long, only until they can figure out how to make money off of what the other side wants. And they got themselves in trouble on the CO2 and carbon dioxide issue because they never alerted the public. They never alerted the Republican voting base that they were changing their strategy. They never did that. And that's why now the state of North Dakota is giving out a $300,000 grant to an engineering firm to re-educate the public on CO2, because they never actually told the public what they were doing and what their strategy was when they switched their plans from opposing the left to embracing the left on their own terms.
Well, I consider it their hubris. They just automatically expected that they would be followed, that we would sit back and go, oh, well, you must be doing something that is for our benefit, so please continue. And whenever I hear someone say the word re-education, you'll have to forgive me, but the hair on the back of my neck stands up, and I cringe, because that term has some real bad people behind it in historical reference. And that's exactly the way I'm feeling right now. It's not that I have an intelligence enough to feel that something's wrong. I simply need to be re-educated, and then everything will be fine. Me and some of the people I know are not jumping into that with both feet, I'm sorry to say. And it sounds to me like you've figured out that this is bad no matter who's in charge.
Yeah, it's very Orwellian, and anybody who has read 1984 knows about doublespeak, groupspeak, stuff like that, and that's really what this has become. And the fact that the state of North Dakota is supposed to be a regulatory body over this pipeline, but yet now they are spending money to promote CO2, claiming it's not about the pipeline, but that's the only thing going on that would require any spending. And then part of the, you know, they rejected the bid of a actual public relations firm out of Minneapolis that I've done work with in the past. They're actually the ones that hired me in 2009 to help fight Obamacare on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They declined that bid, but they accepted AE2S's bid to do this. And as part of that bid package, they included Scott Hennin's private consulting firm, Fieldstone, as part of that bid process. So ultimately, the state of North Dakota is essentially hiring AE2S and Scott Hennin to re-educate the public on CO2, because the regular voters and the regular people out in the country don't know how this is good for North Dakota. And Doug Burgum has stated that if you're against this pipeline, you're against North Dakota. He's flat out said that in the Bismarck Tribune last fall, or last spring, actually. And it is, there's so much demonization. There's so much antagonizing of regular people on this issue that it is amazing. I mean, like you said, it is hubris.
Yes.
The Republican Party at the very top has decided to take this issue, make it their own, make some money for their benefactors, their campaign donors, and screw any of the people at the bottom that actually voted for them in the first place, because they know they will get elected no matter what, because North Dakota is not going to elect any Democrats.
And we're going to just go with the R.
So it comes down to the Republicans are so safe. They know they can get away with anything if they try. They've adopted that, you know, the Trump, you know, like when he says that he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and get away with it.
Yep.
That's the mentality the Republicans have in North Dakota as well.
And I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it every doggone day. All right. My next profit margin break is for Claire Corey. Take it away, Paul.
Hi, this is Representative Claire Corey. I am running to be your next state senator in District 42. I am the only one in this race that is conservative, experienced, successful in delivering you results, and a proven leader. I have proudly passed over $515 million in tax relief, introduced military-friendly legislation, and fought for school choice.
Hi, I'm Bea Marie, and campaign manager for Claire Corey. She's the best candidate for state senate and District 42.
Vote for me, Claire Corey, on June 11th. Paid for by Claire Corey for Senate.
Okay, well, see, I'm just being overrun at the amount of people that are looking at eminent domain because of this pipeline. They're having all of their basic property rights and stuff basically trampled on by supposedly the party that is property and personal rights first and stuff. There seems to be no option, because now they're going to basically, having secret meetings, etc., they're going to be declaring it a public utility, which means, quite frankly, screw you. We're coming. Yep. Is there any way to stop this?
Well, there certainly is. And we need the public to be more vocal about it. The folks here in Bismarck, it's a big deal here. We've got major wealthy developers who have taken the position that they need to protect Bismarck, both for their own financial interests, but for the interests of the city itself. Right now, this pipeline is scheduled to be run 3 miles east of the ETA zone, territorial zone. They did move the north route, where it is on the north side of town, but they did not move where it is on the east side of town. And we've been pushing them to do that. Then simultaneously, this last January through March, I got hired by the Freedom Caucus National Organization to go down to South Dakota and help their members in South Dakota during their legislative session. And the pipeline is their number one issue. They are currently collecting signatures for a referendum to put on the ballot Senate Bill 201 in South Dakota. That was the bill that took South Dakota's existing law and basically replicated North Dakota's law, requiring their version of the PSC to override local government.
Correct.
So if the people of South Dakota collect their 17,000 signatures, that law will be frozen and they have until June 25th to get that done. It will go on the ballot in November, and the voters in South Dakota will be able to decide whether they want to give up their local control that current state law gives their counties a lot of authority on zoning, more than North Dakota has, but their legislators decided that they would pass the Landowner's Bill of Rights that takes away landowner rights and takes away local control and gives it to the state authorities.
That's the funny thing you mentioned that, because when I actually read the bills, and that shows you I have no life, but and the way that they're titled, usually if it says it's to benefit something, the actual bill is the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. Because they're counting on the fact that people won't get past the headline, which in most stories they don't, and will simply believe that it is for their good and that it is exactly what they say. And thus they're duped, and then they can't understand what's going on, but then they vote the people back in.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell?
Yeah, because the voters have been conditioned to believe that voting for a Republican is safer than voting for a Democrat in all cases, no matter what. And when we look at all the problems in North Dakota and South Dakota, it's the Republicans in charge. I got started in 2006 and got, I was going after guys like Earl Pomeroy, Kent Conrad, Byron Dorgan, Heitkamp. I miss the old days when I could go after a few Democrats here and there. They aren't there to go after. They're not in charge. And people say, well, you're too hard on Republicans. Well, they have 80% supermajority in the legislature, and they have all the statewide offices. Who else are we supposed to go after? They're the ones causing the problems.
Exactly.
So either change your ways, act more conservative, and do what you say you represent, or eventually the voters are going to get tired of it. And I think that we're getting to the point where it's not a matter of if, but when voters start voting for Democrats again, not because they prefer the Democrats, but because they simply want somebody there to act as a counterbalance. Because right now there is no counterbalance. The Republican Party demonizes anybody in the conservative realm,
yes,
who sounds critical of the Republican Party. That's how they treat Rick Becker. That's how they treat Jared Hendricks or anybody who was part of the Bastiat caucus. In South Dakota, it's the same way with those legislators that are associated with the Freedom Caucus. Conservatives are the only opposition that the Republican Party has anymore in these hyper red states. And as a result, if Democrats went back to their traditional basis of being pro-farmer, pro-property rights, lower taxes — there was a time when Democrats were for lower taxes. Even the NPL in North Dakota, they were socialists, but they wanted to create socialist entities like the state mill and the state bank,
yeah,
to generate money to reduce taxes on the farmers. So they were actually trying to use socialism to reduce taxes back 100 years ago. So ultimately, if the Democrats in North Dakota could figure out how to run their party again and find legitimate candidates that weren't these crazy wokesters, Republicans would have actually something to be worried about. But right now, they don't have anything to be worried about except for guys like Rick Becker,
which they're doing their best to demonize right now, because between the pack with Finken and mm-hmm. some of the other stuff that's going on, for the uninformed voter, it's just an absolute nightmare field day. And they've got money behind them. I'm getting mm-hmm. deluged with flyers and all kinds of advertising on the radio and stuff that is, quite frankly, spouting stuff I know from having done research is not true. But right. they can say anything they want to because it's political advertising, so it's considered,
yep.
hyperbole, and you can't. And even if you could sue somebody, nothing had happened in the courts.
There's nothing happened. We do have laws about false advertising against one candidate against another, which is unconstitutional in and of itself on the First Amendment basis. But there's nothing against political action committees, super PACs,
yep.
Anything doing that as well. And so, again, this is another area where the Republican Party is a pot calling the kettle black, because we talk about fake news, we talk about mainstream media being biased and being left-wing, but when it comes down to it, Republicans use the same tactics.
They I mean, do.
You look at the guys like Rob Port and those folks who talk about the normies and wanting to go back to the normal Republicans and not liking Trump. And I'm not a fan of Trump either.
No, I understand.
You know, I consider him to be a rhino. But as much as they scream against Trump and Trump supporters, their candidates like Tammy Miller and whoever else, you know, Julie Fedorchik,
Armstrong,
they pander and pretend to be the Trump candidate.
Yes.
Even Doug Burgum right now is going around the country,
kissing ass,
going to billionaires, asking them for money so that they can bail out Donald Trump from his legal cases. And with Doug Burgum wants to be vice president.
Yes, he does.
He's gonna end up, if he gets there, he'll be the loan shark for the billionaires that make sure that Trump does what they want, which is going to neutralize his ability to claim to be independent, because if you're taking hundreds of millions of dollars from people, you're not independent anymore.
No. But again, they won't care. They right. won't care, because nobody is going to do anything about it. And by the time the fox is in the hen house, it's a little late to think about fastening the gate.
Right.
And that's the thing. I've gotten into trouble because I've openly told people, there's no way in hell I'll vote for Trump if Doug Burgum is the VP. And I would be reluctant to vote for Trump anyway, because he's a really bad choice of people. Picking people it to be his surrounding... It's. I sit back and I look at what he's done in the past and what he's doing currently. This is not earning my confidence, because it's like you said, I'm not seeing conservative ethics here. And he's a great showman. And I don't know if his heart's in the right place or not. That I'm not even going to get into that contest. But I have to say that in general, the one thing I will say about the man is he is a crap judge of character when it comes to people that he's working with, period, in a sentence.
Absolutely.
He surrounded himself with shit.
He is terrible at hiring people, and that is the number one job of a president.
Yes. Yes. And it's just disgusting when I look at everybody. I mean, I listen to Julie Fedorchak, and whenever she's asked a pointed question about what will you do for this, what will you do? Well, we won't have to worry once Trump gets in office. Because Trump will make sure that the guy's not freaking God. But see, they're right. setting him up. This is the only way they're going to be able to control what he does, because he is a bull in a china shop. I will say that. But mm-hmm. to me, this is just more of the same. And meanwhile, there's a lot of other people that are smaller people like you and me and stuff who are sitting back going, oh, yes, yes. Once he gets in, the world will be puppy dogs and rainbows. And I'm like, no. No, this is just a continuation down the path we're going. That's all this is, but you're going to feel better about it.
Right. And, you know, when I'm on the radio in Bismarck or Fargo, you know, I'll get these callers who don't understand the carbon dioxide pipeline and the Summit Carbon Solutions system. And they genuinely believe that Donald Trump is going to save them.
Yep.
On this. And I have to explain, he signed the bill that made this possible. That Barrasso bill was a Republican bill for the oil industry. He supported it. If anything, he's going to come in and sign another bill to increase those credits. So not only is he not the savior on this particular issue, he's probably closer to the devil on this particular issue.
Yep. That's what I'm worried about, is the fact that people have got such a mental block. And they're looking for a savior, because they're overwhelmed, they're tired, they're exhausted, and they don't want to do the heavy lifting. They want someone to do it for them. Therefore, they've put all their eggs into the Trump basket. And like I said, we're sliding downhill. And whether you're holding the Trump basket or not, the trajectory is the same. And we're in some deep doo-doo. So you mentioned voting for Democrats and stuff. Do you really think we can vote our way out of this?
Only if we vote for new people who are educated on the issues. Just voting for Republicans is not going to fix the problem. Voting for Democrats is definitely not going to fix the problem, but it might send a message to the Republicans in charge. in certain cases. In certain districts, that might be an option. You know, and this is why the voters also voted for term limits, because they want to see forced turnover. I don't necessarily think term limits is going to be good for North Dakota long term. And I could foresee a situation in 20, 30, 40 years where conservatives have to overturn term limits because it hasn't gone their way. Same goes for initiated measures. You know, the Republican Party, including many conservatives, have tried over and over for the last decade to make it more difficult for citizens to do initiated measures. In 2020, I led the charge against that measure too, that would have created a legislative veto over the people. This year, we've got another measure on the ballot the legislature put on, which requires two votes of the people for constitutional yes. measures, and then it gives the Secretary of State unilateral power to decide if a measure is a single subject or not. And one only needs to look to South Dakota to know how that gets abused, because the voters of South Dakota approved recreational marijuana, industrial hemp, and medicinal marijuana all at the same time. And their governor, Kristi Noem, who is not a conservative, by the way.
No.
Challenged it, took it to court, and had the Supreme Court declare that those three issues, which anybody who knows about those issues knows that they're all one topic.
Yes, they are.
They're all one subject. But they declared that it's because it does three different things, that's three different subjects. And so the idea of single subject is very subjective in and of itself. And if you give the Secretary of State unilateral power to determine that, you're just asking for abuse.
Well, and that's exactly what I see happening. I've got my very last profit margin break here for Redemption Shield. And I want to remind everybody, you can go to gfbestsource.com. And at the bottom of the homepage, you can click on the shield to save yourself some money so you can order today.
Have you noticed the ever-alarming 400,000 cell towers that have gone up in the United States alone? How about the electronics that reside in every room of our homes and Wi-Fi that runs 24/7? 5G cell phones are carried in our pockets hours on end. Common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, palpitations, headaches, memory loss, and so much more. Redemption Shield is on the cutting edge of offering products that protect your family from electromagnetic and microwave radiation. Start protecting yourself now. Go to redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded today. Use code GFBS and save 10%. Redemptionshield.com.
Okay. Yeah, there's another thing that's got me very, very nervous, and believe me, I don't sleep much anymore, but you had a wonderful article on crypto, carbon, and corporate welfare. And because this cryptocurrency and stuff is making this huge push, and there's a lot going on lately with the central banking stuff, and we have our own bank in North Dakota, which kind of, in a way, functions like that, but what is coming down the pipeline, and how is Governor Burgum being involved in that little debacle?
So what is happening is that because both the federal government and states like Minnesota, where we export most of our electricity goes, companies like Xcel Energy, you can look at their long-term plans that were published in 2019 even, and 2021, and they talk about closing down the coal plants sooner. They brag about being able to close down the coal plants sooner and switch over to green energy again.
Oh, God.
And so the state of North Dakota has taken the approach of, we're going to try to save the coal plants in North Dakota by bringing in this cryptocurrency business to create artificial demand for electricity. And so they believe that by building these cryptocurrency operations in North Dakota, that will suck enough electricity out of the coal plants to justify keeping them open, even beyond the point where the market deems them to not be needed. And, you know, when we talk about the market, we're talking about utility companies.
Yep.
Everybody thinks that it is just the environmentalists trying to shut these things down. No, the companies themselves want to get away from coal because it's not as big of a moneymaker as people think. There's more money in the renewables because there's less maintenance involved. You just replace the unit. You don't fix the unit. So they look at it as being a money saver long term. Plus, they get all these different tax credits from the federal government to put them up in the first place.
Yeah.
And so they're building these cryptocurrency operations to create artificial demand that is now causing our electricity rates to rise because the surge rates and that sort of thing, especially up in the Williston area, are creating an influx of demand. I just saw MDU, the average MDU user in North Dakota is going to see a $13 a month increase because of the extra energy being taken off the coal plants by these cryptocurrency operations. And they are doing this in anticipation of losing the Minnesota market, and that this is the only way that they're going to be able to keep those coal plants operational and maintain that baseline by having inflated demand. We are finding out that in the electricity business in North Dakota, it's as bad to be an export state as it is to be an import state. Because when you're an export state, you rely on your customers wanting your product. Minnesota is our customer. They don't want electricity from coal. They want it from wind and solar. And they're going to get a nuclear because Xcel owns nuclear plants down in Minneapolis area.
Yeah.
And so we are being pushed by Minnesota to do things that are not in our best interest. But the idea is that by promoting these cryptocurrency operations, they can make money and they can keep the demand high enough to justify keeping the coal plants open longer.
Well, I
So
know
this is
we.
all part of the corporate subsidy, corporate welfare program.
I know we just got a big one up by Walhalla in Langdon, up in Nokomis. They went into the pyramid. And the funny thing about that is, I took a look at and peeled back that onion and stuff. And not only is it going to be an electricity hog, but the amount of water that is required to keep those engines, the data banks and stuff, cool is enough where they're going to be able to power their own freaking greenhouse.
And the same thing goes for the carbon pipeline. It's going to be a lot using a lot of water. But I remind people when the issue of water comes up, it's important to keep in mind how much water gets used out in the oil fields. The average water or the average oil well takes 3 million barrel or 3 million gallons of water to frack. So if you do 100 oil wells in a year, you're using 300 million gallons of water, which is equivalent to what the pipeline is going to use in all the states combined. So in Iowa, it's a bigger deal because they don't have oil and they need the water to grow the corn for the ethanol plants in the first place. But in North Dakota, if you're concerned about the water usage in these sort of projects like crypto mining and the pipeline itself, I would look at the math in the oil fields because they use a lot more water. And so if we start making a big deal about the water and these other things, it might bite us on the oil side as well.
Well, when you mentioned this, and again, we're looking at the cryptocurrency, it was HB 1082. What was the deal behind that?
But you're making me remember a year
I
and
know,
change
I
ago.
apologize, but because you said you urged Burgum not to sign it, and he signed it anyway.
That would have been related to
Monopoly status to the.
the monopoly
Yep,
status
central
of
bank digital currency.
and in so that was a direct result of the South Dakota Freedom Caucus coming out and fighting the bill down there. They got it at the last minute, and then we got fighting against it at the last minute. Burgum believed that by if he would have vetoed it would have made North Dakota not competitive on these cryptocurrency investment models. And he was already wanting to get Kevin O'Leary, who's involved in BitZero, to come up here to North Dakota and get involved. All of these things tie together. There's so many things that are going on at one time that the establishment folks can very easily declare anybody who talks about these things to be conspiracy theorists. And part of the problem is that a lot of the people that do talk about these things are conspiracy theorists. And so it is viewed as if everything they talk about is, but there are some things, some issues that are legitimate, and the legislators that pass these bills don't understand them. Even if they read the bill, which they rarely do, they don't understand what it does. You go to legislature. I know for a fact there's only really one legislator that understands cryptocurrency, and that's Nate Thoman from Mandan, because he's in the business and he's an IT guy. I don't think that any other legislator even understands what cryptocurrency is or how it works. And I mean, I barely understand it, and I've been studying it for 5 years.
Well, and that's the other problem I have is I've talked to legislators before and stuff, and one guy I even noticed when I even was brave enough or stupid enough, I'm not sure which, to go out in the media and say that he relies on his lobbyists because nobody can read all the bills. So you're going to rely on a lobbyist to tell you what to do? I mean, what the hell are they down there for? If they can't get their poop in a group for the 3 months or whatever it is, they're down there every 2 years. What the hell?
Well, as a lobbyist, it is my job to make sure they understand what's going on.
I understand that, but what I'm getting at though is if that's the only venue that they have, not that you do a bad job, but you understand my point. Isn't the fact that's pretty limited to not be at least reading the bills and doing your own research as well as listening to the opinions of others?
There are 1,000 bills every session, and I can tell you that I skim all the bills. I don't read all the bills. I probably read 150 to 200 front to back at the most, and that's after I've skimmed through them. And then I still miss a few important ones here and there, and I'm caught by surprise that at the last minute. It's actually humanly impossible to both read and understand every single bill that is up there. That they're supposed to rely on their committees, but the committees that assumes that the committees understand the bills in the first place.
Correct.
And a lot of this, the executive branch brings the bills in and knows what they do, and they just have to trust that the executive branch is not trying to pull something. And that is misplaced trust, in my experience.
Well, yeah, I was just gonna say, you'd have to forgive me if my opinion of trust but verify is a little bit more strong than it was in the past, and maybe the problem is the fact that what the hell are we doing 1,000 bills for anyway? Because a lot of them that I read, and I will admit you, were just frivolous and garbage. So it's like they're trying to drown the important stuff with the garbage in the hopes that everything else will get through.
Well, so North Dakota is rare. Every single bill gets a vote in North Dakota. We don't have committees give recommendations of do or do not pass, but they don't actually kill bills. Down in South Dakota, they have the power to kill bills, and it takes a 2/3 majority to bring them back to the floor. I would highly argue against going towards the South Dakota model. I used to think that would be a good thing, that I experienced it firsthand this year. Being able to have every bill get a vote is a good thing. I would suggest putting more limits on how many each legislator can introduce, putting the timeline and the deadline earlier before session, getting them posted earlier. I would even recommend, I'm not a fan of going to annual sessions, but I would like to see us go from having sessions in the odd number years to even number years. So you get elected in November of 24. Right now, the session starts in January 25. I think that we should create a skip year and not have the session until the next year, that January of 26. It gives newly elected legislators a year to get up to speed, to go to interim committee meetings. And then the other benefit is that it makes the legislative session closer to the election, so people don't have as much time to forget what the legislature did. So I would advocate that we change the year from the odd number to the even number in order to give legislators a better chance. And I think that with term limits coming up, that's going to be very important to do.
The one other thing I was wondering is, can we limit the amount of legislation that the departments and other things put forward? Because last legislative session, there were quite a few departments that were throwing legislation out there for people to vote on. I mean, that was overpowering in itself.
Well, and so they have halfway fixed that. In the old days, a agency or department could introduce their own bills directly. Now it is mandated that they go at least go through an interim or standing committee. And so that's actually an improvement. Right now is an improvement over what it used to be, because it used to be they could just introduce whatever they wanted directly. Now they at least have to go through a committee to do it.
Well, it's never dull, I'll tell you that. Every time the legislation is in session, if I think I don't sleep well now, it really goes to hell in a handbag. Dustin, I have to tell you, if you're willing, I would love to have you back on again. You are an amazing source of research and information, and I happen to have the link to your Substack and other things out on the show thing, so every people can go directly there. And I would like to thank you so much for giving us this time. And if you'd be willing, we'd love to have you back on again, because
sure thing,
man, yep. You're awesome. I would like to leave my people with this. Liberty lies in the hearts of men and women. When it dies there, no constitution, no law, no court can save it. Credited to Learned Hand from 1944. Ladies and gentlemen, we are there today. So everybody, we have another Common Sense Uncensored in the can. Have a marvelous Monday. And as always, everyone, God bless.